Hi, again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you today from an unfortunately smoky West Coast as wildfires continue to burn to the south of us and blocked out the sun for a few days. But I have the great opportunity that I'm quite excited about to speak with Harris Koufidis, who is a PhD student and physician working in the Department of Learning, Informatics, Management, and Ethics at the Karolinska Institute. The work we'll be discussing, I understand to be part of his PhD research. It's a paper called Grounding Judgment in Context, a Conceptual Learning Model of Clinical Reasoning. And it'll be found in the November 2020 issue of Medical Education for those of you who are looking for it. Harris, not only are you in the middle of a PhD and busy as a physician, but I understand you're home on paternity leave. So I feel particularly grateful that you took the time to have this conversation with me.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much for having me here, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about our research.
Well, so you clearly have a deep interest in clinical reasoning, given that you've committed to doing a PhD in this. Can I ask more generally about the scope of your PhD? What is it that you're trying to pursue?
Yes, that's a good question, because I've changed many times the route that I would try to pursue. And I'm
You're the first PhD student who's ever done that.
So if I would summarize it, my project, as you said, concerns clinical reasoning, and it mainly concerns learning clinical reasoning by medical students. So I'm most interested to research on how our medical students start to learn clinical reasoning through their medical clerkships. So that's the overall aim I'm trying to investigate.
And clinical reasoning is a massive field. There are thousands of papers, as you know, written on the topic. Yeah. What is it that you are trying to bring to that discussion that's relatively unique?
Yes, that's, as you point out, I'm not the first or the last to research on clinical reasoning. There is a very big research tradition of more than half of a century, and you're very, very aware of this. What is new here, what we tried to do with this paper and the PhD project, is that we tried to give rather a fresh methodological and epistemological angle on the study of clinical reasoning. Much of the research in clinical reasoning over the last at least 20, 30 years comes from a very quantitative paradigm from the cognitive sciences. And we've made enormous progress in understanding our cognitive processes and how we think, how we make decisions. We have at least two Nobel laureates that have been awarded. I'm talking about a bit more generally from the psychology field, Kahneman on decision-making and Simon on judgment and problem-solving. So we have an enormous tradition there from the cognitive sciences that has benefited the medical education field a lot. But I would argue here that there is also alternative or complementary ways of studying or researching the field. And one of these we have tried to do here by using qualitative methodologies, and in particular grounded theory, which may sound a bit provocatory, I can understand, by using grounded theory to understand clinical reasoning. That was the first thing, but it's novel here. The other new thing that we tried to do was to shift the focus from the cognitive processes to the actually learning of clinical reasoning. So here we were not so much interested in how our brains process information, or the system one, system two theories, the structure paradigms and all these prototype theories, exemplar theories, but we tried to see how our students actually learn this. For example, studying driving is a bit different from studying how we learn to drive. How we drive is a bit different from how we learn to drive. So that was the focus here, how we learn to judge, how we learn to make judgments, how we learn to make a diagnosis. I don't know if I answer your question, but...
No, perfectly and very sensibly. Those are both good reasons and consistent with my impression as to how this work is taking us in an interesting new direction. When you talk about applying grounded theory to this particular topic, you appear to have used a triangulating methodology with a variety of different data sources. Do you mind explaining to our listeners how you observed clinical reasoning in context?
Yes, grounded theory is a methodology that requires that you work iteratively and in cycles, back and forth, back and forth. What we did is at first we started with some initial semi-structured interviews. The problem with grounded theory, or the curse and the blessing at the same time, is that when you start, you don't really know exactly where you will land. You have to be very focused on your data, and you have to let your data drive you through this process. And this is a challenge. You have to be largely theoretical in the beginning. So we started with these interviews, semi-structured interviews, where we asked of 10 participants who were doing their clerkships in their third year of medical school. I must say here in parentheses that this is a PBL curriculum, students that we studied. So we asked them to pick a patient that they have encountered during their ongoing clinical clerkship and describe him and talk about him a bit freely in the beginning. And we asked them to pick a patient that was very challenging or something that made an impression on them. By analyzing this data from these semi-structured interviews, preliminary categories start coming. And we think now we should continue with this process that's called theoretical sampling and get more semi-structured interviews to fill in the gaps and make these initial categories a bit richer. But then we thought that that would be even more interesting to observe students as well, because it's another thing to interview and another thing to observe and test in a way if these categories stand up in the observations as well. So then we started recruiting students at the emergency department, where I did some observations of the students interacting with the patients when they were examining the patients. And one of the reasons for the choosing also the observations, or including these observations, we thought that they yield much richer contextual data, so we could capture the context much better with the observations and the complementary field interviews after this. So that's the main methods that we used.
And after going through all of that, one of the core concepts that seems to have emerged, you've labeled disjunctions. That's not a term I had come across before, so I wonder if I can just ask you to explain what that means.
Thank you for this question. We have pondered a lot on the wording of the definition of disjunctions. And so I think that the term that describes disjunctions best is the word tension. It's a tension that the students experience when, for example, if I say it as simple as I can, when they see a dissonance between what is expected and what is actually experienced in a clinical situation with a patient. The students, when they come in and interact with the patients, they have already some assumptions, some beliefs, some convictions, even before they meet the patients. And during this interaction, during this patient encounter at the clerkship, they see that some of these assumptions are strongly challenged. Many of the elements that come up, source up during the encounter, challenge their assumptions, and they are in a way contradictory to what they believed. And this creates tension, this creates stress, this is a very emotional state, I can say. So these junctions, in a way, is a state of tension. And as my supervisor, Charlotte Silen, used to say, it's a temporary chaos, and the students seek to bring back the order. So these junctions, in a way, lead to our other big conceptual category, this grounding judgment in the clinical context. These junctions bring sort of a reaction, because you have to relieve the tension. That's what we found, in any case, from our data, that these tensions have to be relieved.
And so when you make that link to context, you mean it's the student wrapping their head around why this particular clinical situation is playing out in this space that helps them resolve what they're seeing or experiencing from what they anticipated?
Exactly. It's the student asking himself, what's going on here? What is that I don't understand here? So that's what's happening in a disjunction.
Can you give us an example of the sort of observation that you're describing?
Yes, there came many, many instances of these disjunctions where we see, for example, that the students' assumptions are challenged. Many, for example, students believed that the patient cannot be suffering from two medical conditions simultaneously. So when they met the patient and they had one disease in mind. And then after the interaction with the patient and then the supervisor, then it came out that the patient had actually two diseases at the same time. So this is an example of a disjunction, that the realization by the student that, whoa, a patient's symptoms can, for example, depend on two simultaneously medical conditions. That's a distinction. Or a patient not manifesting all the typical symptoms of a disease. A patient, I remember a student saying that, I didn't believe that this was a COPD patient because he didn't cough. And we have been learned that all COPD patients cough. So this creates these tensions, these gaps of understanding that have many interesting consequences for their learning.
It sounds very much like the notion of threshold concepts, where the person is struggling with this state of uncertainty and then sort of makes a breakthrough to a deeper level of understanding. Your whole focus, as you said at the beginning, is trying to better understand how clinical reasoning is learned. And presumably that's to try to enable us to help students learn it better or more efficiently. Do you have any particular insights from this paper already that has changed your practice in terms of how you're trying to support students to learn clinical reasoning?
Yes, I could say that the study attempts first to advance the theoretical conceptualization of learning clinical reasoning. So we tried to develop a conceptual learning model to build a small theory, in a way, of how students learn. And I must say that this model is something that is continuously evolving, and it's something that we plan to follow up, make it better in the next studies that will come during the PhD project. So it's a model under development, and this model mainly concerns the theoretical level. It's in a more abstract level of clinical reasoning. As I understand your question, you mean more as a practical implication,
right,
for the clinical teacher. I would say that there are certain benefits that the clinical teacher can gain from this study. One is that to understand that most of these states of disjunctions that the students experience are quite, I would say, they're silent. Students were not aware of these disjunctions. They have not used this word. They have not used the word conflict. They have not used the word tensions during the interviews. These conflicts, these tensions came up after the analysis of the data. So the students were not actually aware of this. When I was asking, just to give an example, when I was asking at the end of every interview, so what did you learn? They said, oh, I came up, I learned two new drug names, or I learned what's the Glasgow Coma Scale. But none of the students I interviewed or observed was actually aware of these disjunctions happening, but they actually happen because they learn from them. So one thing for the clinical supervisors could be to highlight these disjunctions and maybe create the necessary conditions at the clinical clerkship where students can experience such disjunctions. More challenging patients, more difficult patients, more interesting patients. In a way, create these conditions so that the student can experience such abnormalities in a way in understanding.
Right. Well, and I appreciate you being somewhat circumspect in that regard. As you said, you've got more work to do, but it's certainly interesting and promising path of study. And it makes a lot of sense that being careful to listen for those disjunctions and pointing them out might help students a bit more explicitly take those steps that you're describing in their transition of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So given that promise of work to come and knowing that you're still working on your PhD, I'm absolutely certain it will come in this particular instance. That seems like a really good spot for us to wrap up on. And so I'm going to thank you and release you so that you have some time to continue this important work.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, my pleasure. I enjoyed reading your paper and recommend it to anybody else with an interest in this area. Those of you who fall into that category will find it in the November 2020 issue of Medical Education under the title Grounding Judgment in Context, a Conceptual Learning Model of Clinical Reasoning, and under the byline of Harris Koufidis, who's the first author and soon-to-be PhD who's driving this work.
Thank you, Kevin.